for the last shiur of our series on Meiser, before we do our next series on Tzedakah and Aniyim and the like, maybe in the next few weeks, we wanted to discuss what to do with Meiser money. We discussed everything up until now. Now the question is, so now we have this Meiser money and we know what's included, what's not included, and what can be deducted, so now what do you do with it? So the Rama writes, and it's a Rama in other places that we've seen before, the Rama says that a person should give their Meiser money, I don't know if it's in this Rama here, but the Rama says that you should give your Meiser money to the poor. It is. It's in this Meiser. If you look at this Rama, I mean, we'll focus on the part of the underline there. The Rama at the end, Raki Tnenu La'aniyim, the last few words. The Rama says, just give it to aniyim. That's what a person should do with their tzedakah, and that's what a person should do with their Meiser money. There is a Medrash that seems to add that it would be is also appropriate to give Meiser money for Limud HaTorah. Those seem to be the two primary sources of Meiser money going, either to poor people or for the learning of Torah, and maybe to poor people to learn Torah, you know, something of that nature, which kind of would put everything together. But those are almost like the primary addresses for Meiser money. The question is, what about all the other things? All the other organizations, all the other opportunities that come up, can we use Meiser money for those as well? So that is found in the same Rama. If you look in the Rama, in the beginning of the underline, it's a quote from the Maharil. And I think last week we started talking about the Maharil. The Maharil was the father of many of the Minhagi Ashkenaz. We a lot of times refer to the Maharami Rutenberg as the father of the Halachas and the Minhagim of Ashkenaz, but it was really the Maharil who came before the Maharam. The Maharil, I think, was the Rebbe of the Maharam, and then the Maharam was the Rebbe of the Rush. So it went from the Maharil to the Maharam, the Rutenberg, to the Rush. And in the Rush, we know the three halachic Rishonim, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. The Rush is the Ashkenazic rabbi of the group. The Rif and the Rambam were Sephardim. So a lot of the Ashkenazic customs and traditions flow through the Maharil, the Maharami Rutenberg, and the Rush. Now, I mentioned the Maharami Rutenberg not to be confused with the Maharam, who we will discuss later in tonight's shiur in a few moments, which was not the Maharami Rutenberg. It was a different Maharam. So just to know that, because the Maharil says, "Ein lasos mi meiser shelo dvar mitzvah." You shouldn't use your meiser to do a dvar mitzvah, kigon like neros lebeis hakneses ushar dvar mitzvah, like candles to the shul or any other dvar mitzvah. Ella rak yidnenu la'aniyim, right? Just give it to the poor. So that's a. Okay, that's the Maharil statement from Hilchos Rosh Hashanah. Now, the Taz, which is the second source on the page, quotes the Maharam. If you look, in, it's the second underline in the Taz, not where he says, well, in Liknos Mitzvos, but he says, because of Bedrisha Bechem Tshubas Morenu Harav Reb Menachem, which we'll call the Maharam, not the Maharam in Rutenberg, but the Maharam, Mil Tzedakah, the Maharam says, Shemutzer li temin ha-meiser, you're allowed to give from your meiser money, li yos bal bris, to be a sandik, right? If they used to sell the opportunity to be sandik, they used to sell it in the shul, o lahachnis chasam l'chuppah, or to pay for, to help somebody make a wedding, o liknos svarim, lilmod bahem, u lahash'ilon l'acherim lilmod bahem, or to buy svarim to learn from, or to give to others, to lend them to others to learn from. Im lo haya yecholes biyado, v'lo haya oseh ha-mitzvah. Right, that's important. When can you do this? Im lo haya yecholes biyado, v'lo haya oseh ha-mitzvah. If you would not have otherwise been able to do the mitzvah. Im lo haya yecholes biyado, if you didn't have the opportunity to do these mitzvahs without your meister money, and you would have passed on the mitzvah, had it not been for using Meiser money. Therefore, in that case, the Maharam says, you're allowed to use Meiser money. So the question is there a machlokas between the Maharil and the Maharam? We have two different statements. The Maharil says you can't use Meiser for a dvar mitzvah like buying candles for the shul or anything else. And the Maharam says that you can. And he lists three mitzvos: to be a tzaddik, to help somebody get married, and to buy svarim. So are they necessarily, are they arguing? They're not talking to each other. They're not referring to each other. So obviously the Taz thinks that they're arguing, which is why he brings this quote here, although maybe not. Maybe not. Are they arguing? Right? That's a fundamental question in order to move forward, to understand what can be done, should be done with Meiser money, is, are these two sources really agreeing, just talking about different types of mitzvos? Or would you say that no, there's a machlokas here? And then we have to understand what the machlokas is.
Well, is the Ma'aril saying that you can't do any mitzvah, or he's like giving examples, like mitzvahs like giving by Nehru for the Beit Knesset? Or is it just in general he's saying, that was just one example, but in general he's saying you can't do it for any mitzvah?
So what do you think? What would you say if you learned this line of the Ma'aril, where he says, like buying candles for the shul, O shar d'var mitzvah?
These are like physical things.
Buying candles for the shul.
Yeah, as opposed to a wedding, a sandak, or I forgot the other one was.
Buying svarim.
Oh, fine.
Buying svarim, which is an interesting mitzvah also.
Maybe it has to do with the learning aspect of it, so it can kind of fit to where you're going.
Because it's really Baal Peh, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, sandak is doing something.
Whoa. But it's not like a fit, it's not a, like you're physically, you're holding the kit, but the idea of what you're doing is more, it's more of a spiritual.
As opposed to lighting candles for the shul.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I mean, there are a few different opinions to whether there's a machlokas here or not. We'll start with the two opinions who say that they're not arguing. And if they're not arguing, we have to understand then what they're talking about, where the Ma'aril would be saying that there are certain types of mitzvahs you can't use Meiser for, and the Ma'aram would be saying, I agree, but there are some mitzvahs that you can use Meiser for, right? If we say they're not arguing, there has to be a difference between the types of mitzvahs that they're talking about. So,
but you had said that one other rabbi said that there's, if you weren't going to use, if you didn't have the money to do the other mitzvahs, then you can use your Meiser. The other rabbi didn't.
Doesn't say anything. Oh, so
doesn't
that's interesting.
Into account.
So is that the machlokas?
If he had been told that, you know, it's either you know what, Meiser or the candlesticks, Meiser, whatever the four choices,
he
might have given leeway also, but he was under the impression that
you can do it anyway.
The guy would do both, and here he says then it's better to do the Meiser or
so
not use that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very nice. That could be. That's not one of the distinctions I saw, but that could be. That would make sense. Where the Ma'aril would say, yes, if you're not going to be able to do the mitzvah otherwise, then yes, you don't. Then you would be able to use your Meiser money to do the mitzvah. Because the Ma'aram adds, when can you do this? If you wouldn't do the mitzvah otherwise, because you don't have the money to do it otherwise. But maybe the Ma'aril would agree.
But it seems that's not what he's saying. Rock eating anywhere in the end.
That's
rock,
true.
The word rock.
That's
only,
it, although it could be
other possibilities, but I'm excluding them and only for poor people.
Yes, but maybe that's in a situation where you have money to do the other thing. Meaning, if you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah and you can use non-Meiser money, and you have Meiser money, so don't use the Meiser money, just give that money to Aniyim and use your other money to do the mitzvahs. Right? Or let me ask a different question. What mitzvahs are they talking about? Right, they both give examples, which is interesting. Ma'aril only gives one. And then he says, O shar dvar mitzvah,
which is broad.
Which is very broad. But what type of mitzvah are they talking about?
Like one for the community.
One for the community. The Ma'aril talks about buying candles, lights for the shul, right? What else? What types of mitzvahs is the Ma'aram talking about? Where he says, helping somebody get pay for a wedding, mm-hmm. buying the opportunity to be a tzaddik, and buying svarim.
Maybe I don't understand. What is buying a to be a tzaddik? What
means
needed to be a tzaddik? Well,
so used to be
you pay the moel.
No, you pay the Baal Bris. You pay the father of the son.
Then that's That's just being covered.
It was a big zechus to be a sandik. The Gemara talks about your sandik. It's like you bring the ketores, or the midrashim talking about that. So there is a big zechus to be a sandik. It's a big thing. A sandik doesn't say tachan. It's a yomtiv for a sandik, just like it's a yomtiv for the father and the moel.
So you pay
the moel. You pay the father to be sandik at his son's bris. You know, and
can the sandik also be a school for getting rich?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind
of
like
they say. I mean, but that's like the story.
So it's different than that goes into your theory of
contract,
right?
All comes back to that.
Yeah.
All right, very nice.
I would have a tangent, but it's different than like buying an aliyah, that they say.
It's different than buying an aliyah, although that's a separate question. Buying an aliyah, can you use
that's
my
also summer? Getting your own covet.
That's also, but it's also doing a mitzvah. It's true, it's for yourself. It's true, you're getting, there's a benefit there. So is buying sperm.
Well, no, you could learn by yourself without anyone knowing.
You don't
need
sperm.
What?
You need sperm to learn.
I'm saying you could buy a paper and then learn 24 hours a day in your house.
Right, but that's your benefit.
But I'm saying
you want to learn.
But I'm saying outside.
It's not covered.
Outside covered, you know.
Okay, let's assume everybody has the right perspective and intentions that they want to get an aliyah, not for the cover of getting an aliyah. They want an aliyah because it's a mitzvah to get an aliyah.
It's written and not in the year 2000.
Yeah, I mean, I have opinions about that because there were times where we were asked to leave the shul because as a kohen, it's the of a non-kohen aliyah. So like, I'm not too keen on this.
We came to the right place because we don't have a lot of kohanim upstairs.
Upstairs.
We need kohanim. Downstairs, a lot of kohanim, but upstairs, there's never enough kohanim. So. For whatever reason that is. So you came to the right place. As a kohen.
But, buying aliyahs, and like, I would think buying this, sandig, it's, I'm not saying, I'm sure many rabbis
it's a gula.
Learn
it's
and,
a gula.
And
it's a segula. You're right. There is some benefit to it. There is some benefit
to it.
They
do it for the honor.
They could, but they may do it for the segulas that come along with it. It comes with a segula. But, okay.
They could daven during the baby's crying. I hear there's a segula also for that.
That's also a segula.
And they don't have to pay a shulah.
Yeah, but it's a yomtiv. It's a yomtiv for the sandik. You can't pay money to be the moel or the father. You can only pay money to be the sandik. So if you want a yomtiv, you don't want to say tachanun that day,
right.
Mincha. You know you're going to be in a rush mincha time. So one way out of it is to be a sandik. Right? There you go. So anyway, so what types of mitzvahs are we talking about? What types of mitzvahs do you not see here?
Narrow to the Beit Knesset.
Okay, no, but what else?
Ben Adam L'makom.
Ben Adam L'makom. Oh, so that's interesting. That's one way to take this. In the Maram's list, the list of mitzvahs that he says you can do, where does the money end up? You buy the ability to be a sandik. The assumption is that who's selling the opportunity to be a sandik?
The father.
A poor father, right? Chances are, a rich father is not selling the opportunity to be a sandik. Chances are, it's a poor father who's selling the opportunity to be a sandik. Where's the money going when you help somebody make a wedding? To the poor chasan and kala who are making the wedding. And buying svarim and lending them out to other people, right? So all the Maram's mitzvahs that he says you can use your money for, where's the mitzvah going?
To somebody else.
Not just somebody else, but
poor
somebody who's poor. And who used to write Sfarim?
So
poor rabbis. People who are learning. Most people didn't write Sfarim in those days. It was very hard to come by Sfarim. So it was the poor rabbis who were writing Sfarim, or the poor publishers who were writing Sfarim in those days. Didn't happen too often. So that's one way to answer the question. Maybe there's no machlokas. Maybe the Maharam is talking about where the mitzvahs that you're buying, the money itself is going to go to poor people, right? And then it comes back to your point where it's to poor people, but you're getting something out of it, right? Where you're getting sandik, or you're getting the svarim out of it. You're not getting anything when you help somebody make a wedding, except for the mitzvah, but there's no personal benefit to it. So maybe the Ma'aril would agree that if it's a mitzvah where the money anyway, rakit nenu la'aniyah, maybe that's what he means. Rakit nenu la'aniyah means that do a mitzvah where the money will end up by the aniyah anyway. as opposed to buying neros for shul, that you shouldn't do. Because there the money's going to the shul and not going to the aniyim. Right? That's one way to explain.
Unless you're saving the shul money so that they can give more into the
right,
rabbi's
right.
fund.
Well, so that's the thing. The implication here is that giving the money to the shul would not be considered miser. We'll have to get back to that. Because we don't wouldn't want to say that. Represented as the shul. I wouldn't want to say not to give miser money. But no, but that is the implication of that line. If you say that that's the non-distinction between the Ma'aril and the Ma'aram, they're talking about different types of mitzvah, one where the money's going to an ani, one where it's not. The money that's going to an ani, you can use the mitzvah and money for the maaser money for that mitzvah, and where it's not going to an ani, you can't. That's one way. What's another way to say the distinction here? So this is, I wouldn't say it's a stretch, but the types of mitzvahs that are missing here are obligatory mitzvahs. Right? If you look at the list, certainly in the Ma'aram, there is no chiyuv here. There is no personal obligation to be a sanduk. There is no personal obligation to marry somebody off, somebody else off. It's daka, for sure. But there's no chiyuv to buy svarim even. Right? There's no obligatory mitzvah that you have to do. It's not found on this list. Now, the Be'er HaGola writes that the Ma'aram and the Ma'aril are not arguing. The Ma'aram says that you can use Ma'aser money if you're not otherwise going to do the mitzvahs, talking about non-obligatory mitzvahs, where you can do them if you want or if you have the opportunity to, and therefore if your only opportunity to do them is through Ma'aser money, you can fulfill the mitzvah with Ma'aser money. But the Ma'aril is talking about obligatory mitzvahs. And therefore, he says you can't use Ma'aser money for obligatory mitzvahs. Like buying candles for the shul.
Oh, well,
so, hold on. Right, so that's what I say. I don't know, again, I don't know what the chiyuvim, it could be that there was a chiyuv on the tzibor to pay for the candles in the shul, maybe that's what he means, that it's something that they had to do, not an obligatory mitzvah like, we're not talking about the distinction between talis and tefillin. You know, where talis is a mitzvah kiyumis and tefillin is a mitzvah chiyuvis, where every day you have to wear tefillin, and talis you only have to wear tzitzis if you're wearing a four-cornered garment, which we all do anyway nowadays, but in theory it's a mitzvah kiyumis. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a mitzvah where you have the opportunity to do, as opposed to a mitzvah that you have to do. So it could be that everybody was obligated, everybody who was a member of the shul was obligated to pay for the candles of the shul, and therefore it was like an obligatory mitzvah, as opposed to the second list of the Ma'aram, where he talks about the sandik and the svarim and the kasan and kala. That's not an obligatory mitzvah. Yes.
So I'm going to assumption that I know one of the answers already, and that yeshiva tuition you're allowed to use some of this money. Now, from what I understood was you're not allowed to. You have to prorate it, from what I understood, and the amount that would have gone to English, you're not allowed to take away use. But the one that for your Jewish studies you are, but that seems to be the opposite of what you're saying. So you're obligated to teach your child.
Very good.
You know, Jewish studies.
Right.
You're not obligated to teach him. You know,
very good.
Science.
Very good question.
So I'm.
Very good question. We'll talk about tuition later. Very good question.
No, that's like the reverse of what I was under.
So very good question. I just discussed that with Rabbi Kalimer last week. I asked him the same question. I'll tell you afterwards what he said, but. I just discussed that same question. I said with the same logic, where if it's a mitzvah, because the reason why the question is a very good question, I mean, it's a good question anyway, but the reason why it's an even better question is because
boys and girls.
We'll get to boys and girls also, but the reason why it's such a good question is because that seems to be the way that the halacha follows. I don't know the halacha, but that seems to be the way the minhag goes. Is that we make a distinction between obligatory mitzvahs and non-obligatory mitzvahs, right? So that seems to be the way that, which is why it's an important chiluk. Most assume, which we didn't get to, so we'll come back to that. Most seem to assume that there is a machlokas between the Ma'aram and the Ma'aril. And then the question becomes, so what is the machlokas? So it could be it was a machlokas and what the minhagim were in those days. In one town the minhag was to only use for aniyim, and in one town it was to use for mitzvos. the question of whether Meiser is deraisa derabanan, or what I like this chiluk a lot because we spent some time talking about it. The question is, what is Meiser? Is Meiser ksafim Meiser, or is Meiser ksafim tzedakah? Right? If Meiser ksafim is Meiser, then you can understand why it has to go to aniyim. If Meiser ksafim is tzedakah, then you can understand why it would be a little bit more broad to where it can go. Not that tzedakah shouldn't go to aniyim, but it can be a broader definition of where it should go. If Meiser ksafim is like Meiser aniyim, which is, if you remember the first shiur, we talked about what is the, you know, almost ke'en de'oraisa of Meiser. Where does it come from? What is it similar to? What's it an offshoot of? If it's an offshoot of Meiser ani, so we can understand why it would be very specific where it would go, that it would specifically be to aniyim.
We didn't come up with a conclusion specifically which one it was, right? We just
had a difference
of opinion.
Again,
of
because now we assume, most assume that Meiser Ksafim is a minna.
Right. That's what we can.
So if Meiser Ksafim is a minna, it's kind of, this might be the nafkamina. I would say irrelevant, but this might be the nafkamina. So the fact that the minhag seems to have become like the opinion who says that you can use it for mitzvos, you know, I don't know if that tells us that really it's an offshoot of tzedak as opposed to maaser.
Right.
But no, there's no. You know, it's more of a in lamdas,
right,
in understanding rather than in practical.
Right.
So let's assume that the most assume, and we'll go with this, is that that you can't use Meiser for obligatory mitzvos, like buying a lulav and esrog, right? You can't use Meiser for. You can't use Meiser to buy tefillin. But for non-obligatory mitzvos, that's the machlokas Maharam and Maharil, and most just follow the opinion of the Maharam that you can. That you can use Meiser money for non-aniyim, right? For mitzvos. There is an opinion of the Bach who says that you can even for mitzvos that you're chayav to do, like a lulav and esrog and tefillin, but we don't seem to follow, nobody seems to follow that Bach. The Chassam Sofer writes in a tshuva where he discusses this, he says that what everybody should make a tnai before separating their Meiser, that they're going to follow this opinion of the Maharam and use their Meiser money also for mitzvos. Because like we spoke about, if it's difficult for a person to separate Meiser, so then there isn't, and can't, so then there is no obligation to there's no chiyuv Meiser if the person himself will end up needing the Meiser. So too, there can be tanayim, there can be conditions. I accept it. If it's a minug, I accept the minug, I'll tanay on the condition that I can use the broader definition of what Meiser is. I can use it for aniyim, I can also use it for mitzvot. But he ends with that you should try to still do like mechza and mechza, meaning still half of the Meiser money should go to aniyim, and half of the Meiser money can go to mitzvahs. Right? That's what the Chassam Sofer is maskana. That's his conclusion. Is that even though, yes, we can accept the broader view of the Maharam that you can use it for mitzvahs, which one is not obligated to do, and which one may not be able to do if he doesn't use the Meiser for that mitzvah, but still the primary address for Meiser should be aniyim, so it should be like mechza mechza. It should be 50% of your Meiser money can be used for mitzvahs, 50% to aniyim. So, I saw an interesting shaila where there was an exception to this. We said that it's not for mitzvahs that one is obligated in. I saw Rav Yoshev had a tshuva where he writes, in this case, you can use Meiser money for an obligatory mitzvah. And the tshuva was that the husband wasn't religious, and he didn't have tefillin, and he didn't want tefillin. So the wife said that if somebody gives me tefillin, I would wear it, but I won't buy it. So the wife went to Rav Elyashiv, and she said, can I steal the money from him to buy him tefillin? And this is the wife saying, can I steal money from him and buy tefillin? So he said, no, you can't, because that's mitzvah b'avaveira. You can't steal money, but you can use Meiser money. right? Even though it's an obligatory mitzvah, in that case, he said, you can use meiser money to buy tefillin for her husband.
Who's meiser money?
The husband.
You can't take his meiser
money. You can take his meiser, you can use his meiser money or hers.
You can't force
anybody.
Someone to give meiser.
Right, but I guess he was assuming that this person was separating meiser and it wasn't putting on.
Or
maybe it was her meiser money. Maybe it was her meiser money. I don't know. That I'm not sure. But he said you can't use meiser money. You can't steal the money, but you can use
money. You can't use meiser money to help your family?
Can't use meiser money. You can.
So
it's not obligatory.
If you need it. If you need it. If you need it.
You just said that you should use her meiser money
to buy tefillin.
Even if you want to have money for it, and she's...
Right.
If you're buying for your grandchild, they don't have the money,
Then it's different. If they don't have the money, that's different. This guy has money. He can very easily buy it himself. He just doesn't want to. That's different. Yeah.
What about a case where they have the rules and that's our case? So for him, it's obligatory, and so for her, it's not necessarily.
So that's a good question.
So
would
she use the mice of money
right.
to buy it for herself, and then use it as well on...
Well, yeah.
Just give it time.
Good question. It could be. You can kind of haroma. But you have to give it right. Everybody has to own their own lulav and esrog on the first day. But yeah, in theory, a woman is not obligated in a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, so it would be a non-obligatory mitzvah that she otherwise wouldn't do. Again, it has to be with that, you know, that she otherwise wouldn't do if she can't use her mitzvah.
Or
sukkah
or anything like that.
Right. Sukkah, yeah. It's a little bit of harama, but yes. Yeah. Now, there is a question about hider mitzvah. Can you use it for hider mitzvah? Let's say you're going to buy a lulav and esrog, and then you find a nicer one, but you say, you know, I'm not going to spend that extra $20 to buy the nicer esrog, but if I can use meiser money, you know, it would be. I would. So, most seem to say that you can. Because it's beyond the davar shebechova, you know, or similarly, the similar idea. It's not exactly the same because it's not a hider mitzvah, but it's giving more than necessary. Like, let's say you give matanos avyonim, right? So there are different opinions how much you have to give for matanos avyonim. $1, some say $5, some say $10, you know, per ani. You have to give two on Purim. We give mishloach manos, we give one mishloach manos, which contains two foods in it, and matanos avyonim is two gifts to aniyim. One to each ani. And generally we assume, and some they write $1. Others say that it's better to give the amount that they can buy a suda for themselves. So to buy a hamburger and drink, which would be, I don't know, $7 nowadays, or chicken and drink, you know, $5-$7. So the question is, let's say I want to give $100 for matanos avyonim. So the first, we'll say $10, which is obligatory, that I can't use meiser money for because that I'm obligated to do. But what about the other $90 that I give? So that, you would be able to use meiser money, because that's beyond the chiyuv.
You know, even though it's aniyim, it's separate, what you're saying? It's still going to poor people. You're saying
it's fulfilling the mitzvah beyond. It's beyond what's mechuyuv. So it's almost like a separate mitzvah of tzedakah, or of meiser ksav. Meaning it's beyond where you're chayav in the mitzvah of matanos. I can't use meiser money to fulfill the mitzvah of matanos of yonim, even though it's money going to aniyim, which looks exactly like meiser ksavim. For those $10, I can't use meiser money because that I'm chayav in. But beyond where I'm chayav, where I'm going muhuder, or I'm going beyond where the chayav ends, that you're allowed to use meiser money for.
So can you use the meiser money on the a beautiful atcho, because like you're supposed to give a beautiful atcho.
Right.
So is that the whole?
Yeah, but it's probably hither. Unless you buy it in shul, or all the astrogram at the same price.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose a little bit? With you enough money for a regular astrogram, you need to use extra money to buy a beautiful astrogram when someone else cannot have money for an astrogram to start
with. So you're right. Some say it's better to give taniyim. Some say that instead of buying a mehudar astrogram, take that money that you would have spent and give a taniyim. Yeah,
you could be buying like the mitzvah by more people being able to.
But you know, again, it might be better. But at the same time, if a person wants to buy mehudar esrog, then there's room to say that can also come from meiser money. Purchasing svarim. Okay, so purging Svarim is a very interesting question because the Maharam used that as one of his examples of the mitzvahs that you're allowed to do with Meiser money. So there is a machlokas about it because the Aruch HaShulchan writes that he says, well, purchasing Svarim is like purchasing a talus. It's like purchasing a tefillin. That's like buying something for yourself. Why should you be able to use, excuse me, Meiser money for buying Svarim if you can't use it for buying a lulav and a tefillin? So he disagrees with the Maharam. Now others say that the Maharam was right in his day, but nowadays that Svarim are so easily accessible that you shouldn't use it for Meiser money. Because in the Maharam's days, when a person would buy a Sefer, everybody in town would then come and read that Sefer because there weren't many Svarim around. They're very expensive and hard to come by. Nowadays, we have plenty of Svarim, so maybe nowadays it would be different. That being said, everybody seems to agree that if you're buying Svarim for other people to use, that would be okay to use Meiser money. For example, if you're buying Svarim for a Beis Medrash, so that's Meiser, right? That's going to support Limud HaTorah. That's not for you, that's for your own learning to keep in your library. It's going to a Beis Medrash, and then that's going to be used by other people. That everybody seems to agree that you would be able to use Meiser money for buying those Svarim. The Maharam, there's a whole discussion about this, it's amazing, where they write that according to those who say that you can buy Meiser, you can buy Svarim for yourself with Meiser money, it says you have to put in the right in the cover that you bought it with Meiser money so that those who inherit you know that it's not really theirs and has to be available for other people to use as well. Right? They go that far as to say that you have to write that in the inside of the Sefer.
I came across that one. So I want to use the Meiser money for a recorder for this yeshiva.
Yeah.
Buy a recorder I think the rabbi said don't do it because then I think you have to make it known that it's for the yeshiva. It's never for someone's personal use and it's going to get messed up eventually.
Right. So that can get confusing. But in a recorder, it's harder to write on it. In a safer
area.
But anyway, nowadays it seems that seems to be the minute, not to generally for oneself, but for a Beis Medrash, it is okay. What about buying, before we get to tuition, what about buying mitzvos in shul? Right? Like buying an aliyah. So if you look in that same Taz, in the first underline, he talks about buying a mitzvah in shul. And it's interesting because he says that you're not allowed to unless the money is going to go to aniyah. Right, he says, "Lenin liknos mitzvos beis haknesses v'maos meitzer nirali de'im b'shas knias ha-mitzvos hayadaito al zesh shari." He says, "If when you bought the mitzvah in shul, your intention was already at the time of the purchase to use meitzer money, then it's okay. Deha, because ha-maos l'tzedaka azil, because the money is going to tzedaka." Even though he's getting kibud out of it because he's being called up to Sefer Torah, because every meiser the person gives, there's tova sana, meaning I choose which ani to give it to. Right? There is such a concept of tova sana. It's found all over Shas when discussing giving out truma, giving out meiser to kohanim, to levim, that I, as the owner of the crop, retain the ability to decide who it goes to. And therefore, it's my tovas hana. So there's a question whether that's worth anything, actually worth money or not. But because I have the ability to decide who gets the meiser, who gets the truma, so I retain it. So he says everything has that ability. Every meiser has that. He says, as opposed to, if a person doesn't, when he buys the mitzvah, doesn't have the intention of buying, of the money going, of using Meiser money, and then afterwards he says, you know what, why don't I use Meiser money for that, that wouldn't be okay. So he seems to say two things. One is that you have to have the intention when you buy the aliyah, that the money's, you're going to use Meiser money, and hamos l'tzedaka azil. What does that mean, the mos are going to tzedaka? Most l'tzedaka azil, right? The two conditions need to be met in order for when I buy an aliyah in shul, that can be meiser money. One is that my intention has to be at the time of the purchase that it's coming from meiser money, and two, that is going to tzedakah. So I heard this. What? I heard this Taz explained that it's going to tzedakah, meaning that they used to give the money to poor people. So, which means that if the money was going to the shul, you wouldn't be able to use ma'aser money. Right? If you read this inside, I don't know that you have to say that. Right? Because you could very easily read this as follows. If you had the intention to use ma'aser money at the time of the purchase of the aliyah, it's okay to use ma'aser money because the money is anyway going to tzedakah because it's going to the shul.
Right.
Right, that's how I would have read it. Right? What tzedakah is it going to? Not a poor person. It doesn't say it's going to a poor person. It says because anyway the money's going to tzedakah. Where? To the shul.
Well, but that's it. Direct or indirect. Talking about, I guess, directly to an ani.
Why? It doesn't say anywhere that it's going to an ani. Unless this is a quote from somewhere else and that's the context. If you're just reading this...
Right. He's not saying anything.
He's just saying the money's going to tzedakah anyway, so I can buy him. I can buy an aliyah with it. What tzedakah is it going to? The shul. It doesn't say anywhere that the shul is then taking the money and giving it to poor people. It says that this person is buying an aliyah in shul. So where do you think the money's going when it goes to the shul? Not all the money goes to poor people. The money goes to the running of the shul.
But he's commenting on the word rakhtin and aliyah.
That's true.
Because
that's true.
Things explaining what is the end result of the aniyah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe because it helps that, I mean, you come to the shul and have a place to learn and do whatever they need to do because you're giving money to the shul to maintain itself.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think that is meaningful necessarily. The fact that it's going on that line of the Shulchan Aruch. I don't think that tells you anything, necessarily, that he's referring to that type of... that's where it's going to. Because he doesn't reference that in this line, in this sentence where he's talking about buying... He doesn't reference back to the Shulchan Aruch in that case. He's just talking about that it's going for tzedakah. He just doesn't say what type of tzedakah. Okay, maybe that's where you get it from. That would be the tzedakah is talking about the aniyah. But he doesn't say that. He just says it's going to tzedakah. What tzedakah? Well, you're giving money to the shul. You're giving money to the shul. So, but anyway, regardless, most poskim nowadays seem to say, there's Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that's it's Eliezer, seem to say that membership to a shul would be considered to be meiser, because, you know, the question is why. So I would have said, because the shul is considered to, is no worse than doing a mitzvah, right? The shul is a place of, we'll quote, a place of mitzvah. So the shul is no worse than if you can use ma'aser money to do a mitzvah, then you should certainly be able to support a place that is assisting people in doing mitzvahs. Meaning it would be no different than that. Some say because it's a place of limud Torah, of learning Torah. But whatever the reason is, it would be a tzedakah organization. There are those, I spoke once with a posek, who told me that he thought that it would be appropriate to deduct the benefits of the members that you get for being a member, and then the rest would be considered ma'aser. Meaning any direct benefit that you get, like, you know, for members it costs $5, for non-members it costs $10, so that $5 wouldn't be able to be meiser because you're getting a direct benefit from being a member. Seats, let's say seats, the member pays what, $75 instead of whatever, so that money would be considered a direct benefit of a member, and that therefore that wouldn't be considered.
That in itself is prorated to the shul. It's not like you're not getting any other benefit. You
right,
know,
but in order
there's
to...
There's no carnival that you go and ride. It's
no,
it's
true. But in order
if they
to...
they charge every week, you need to go to in shul,
right.
And you charge extra for the, for the non-members, then I guess why Rosh Hashanah would be the same thing. But it's just,
if
it's
money
it's
going to
the
shul,
free,
then seats also. Everybody seems to assume that seats, because something you have to pay for, you can't use Meister money. But you're saying that, why? The money's just going to the shul.
I mean, honestly, charging for seats is almost like a conservative... right of form kind of thing, where they think you only come once a year anyways, and this is how they make the money.
Mm-hmm.
If we're in an Orthodox community where they could just charge a little more on your annual fees,
yeah,
and then not charge, what's the difference?
So some shuls do that. Some shuls add
synagogue, like it's part of your
some
shuls
add for membership, but then if you want to buy more than, you know,
more
you
than
one for you, one
right.
for your wife, and then if you want to buy more, you have to pay
more.
The reason
why the charging seats is for organizations where they know they're only getting them once a year,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to stop it for them,
but
they know they want it to come
out.
That's
semantics. Whether you add it to membership fees or
but
whether you...
But you just said that the membership is deductible as miser, but the seats should not be because it's the cost of the seat.
Right, you're saying...
But it's really...
It's one and the same.
It's one and the same.
No, but if there's any benefit... Right, you're saying...
I'm going to be there whether or not it's not, right? Like
well...
You're
right, right. I don't know, but everybody seems to assume that seats you need to pay for. Yeah, I don't know.
So
if someone
didn't pay for it, are they allowed to throw the person out of shul because they didn't pay for a seat?
No. I'm sure some places they would. Yeah, some places don't let you into the shul. Some places don't let you into shul if you don't have a ticket.
Are they halakhically allowed to do that? To turn you away from davening because you don't have
a
physical money seat? That's what I'm saying. I don't know halakhically if that's so kosher just because
we wouldn't do it.
Right, I'm saying it's
we don't throw anybody
just because people do that, but that doesn't mean how often.
I'm not telling anybody not to buy a seat in shul.
What?
You might not get a seat.
No, no, no. We wouldn't let you sit down.
Buy the Sunday position.
You sit in front of the rabbi seat. One of us is not there, you know, each time. So one of our seats is open.
You should auction off that seat.
There you go. Like a Sunday. It's like
yeah,
a Sunday chair.
I'm not to stay down in that chair.
Right, right. Everybody should buy seats and give money to the shul. And buy svarim for the new base mentors. Why it's a good question. If the money's all going to the shul, you know, the seats really don't cost anything, but it is an added benefit. So you're saying maybe the benefit of being a member, you would say, you can't, you know, that's when you get something directly for your money. The poskim seem not to want to use that for myself. When you're getting something for your money. So if I'm paying membership and
you're just not having to pay for more.
So that means that I'm saving.
That it's not obligatory.
But I'm saving it. Meaning, because I only have to pay $5 instead of $10 for a youth event, so I'm saving that $5. And if I wasn't a member, I would have to pay the $10.
But if you didn't pay membership, then I guess you can buy a seat with being a member.
You can.
So then if you just didn't pay membership and just bought the seat, then technically you're saving even more money. Because you're not buying membership.
That's true. That's why the membership can be counted as meiser.
Right.
But the amount that you're saving for being a member can't be. Because we're saying the seat costs X, right? The seat costs $100. And that's the non-member cost. And then for members, it's $50. So that's saying that we're giving the members, you know, $50 off. Or $50 you already paid in your membership. However you want to say it. But it's, you know, if the seat costs $100... then that's how much you can't count towards meiser.
I agree with your statement that if the shul is having a carnival and they're charging $10 for members, $10 for non-members, that the $10 should not be deducted, but the $5 then can.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, you know, you could have that carnival also at the local library, and there's nothing spiritual about it, there's nothing, it's just a carnival. Davening Rosh Hashanah is...
I hear.
Our whole thing here was about spiritual things.
She was not mitzvah.
Is that mitzvah?
Right, mitzvah.
We could all dive in a room without any chairs for a Yom Kippur, and
good question. It's true, but
some
shuls,
you know,
like something you're buying.
Some shuls give you, two seats as part of your membership, and then if you get,
but that's semantics. Yeah, that's because they charge you more for membership.
Well, that's my point. Let all shuls count that towards the allowable meister.
But then that wouldn't be.
No, you just said.
But then that wouldn't be because if I can buy the seats, I would say then the seats you get wouldn't be considered meiser. Meaning, if I'm whatever the seats cost, you can't count towards meiser because you're getting something for that money.
But that's supposed to be for a mitzvah. What mitzvah is it to buy a seat?
It's not.
Right. So then
you're supposed to.
So what do you
persuade people to do mitzvahs? If you're saying I'm going to charge you money to come to shul, There are plenty of people who would rather not be sitting 6 hours in a shul.
Okay, that's a question of why we can charge money to sit in shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. That's a separate issue. That you have to take up with the board.
Usually
they
keep running
people
to get it there.
Yeah, that's not my. That's not the question. Everybody does charge money to sit in shul, or most people do charge money to sit in shul. I hear maybe we shouldn't charge money to sit in shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But like you said, it's a chance for the shul to make some money. So, but you're saying if that's the case, then it's just like giving to the shul, so then why should it cost anything? Then why shouldn't it be nice enough? I hear. Good question. I don't know the answer to it. It's a good question. If it's just money to the shul, basically, then why should it be any different than giving money to the shul? Here you happen to get a seat out of it. Because you're getting something. You're getting something in return.
It's like the
getting the chair.
It's like the Shalach Monos the shuls do, which really isn't Shalach Monos. Yeah, which is a fundraiser of the shul, where if you give the shul money, you will get a Shalach Monos back.
Yeah.
And then you'll see everyone else who did buy their own Shalach Monos. That's not really Shalach Monos, but it's a fundraiser for the shul.
Right.
But so that should be considered your Meister, even though you got something back. Cause it was
although some say that you can fulfill Shalach Monos from that.
How?
Because when the shul gives you the box, now it's yours.
Okay, time out.
And you don't live in.
I was once. You don't pick up your own box. Someone else.
Maybe you're different. I was once hospitalized, and then we missed the whole Shalach Monos, but I was sick, and my wife gets a call. You know, you were people bought Shalach Monos for you, so we go to the shul, but because we ourselves did not buy a box, we did not have one. So people may have checked our names off the list, but because we didn't give the money, also people wanted to give it to us.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get because we didn't pay ourselves. So maybe this is done differently than that. But like, if every member gets a Shalach Monos, whether they buy one or not, then yes, it's Shalach Monos because they're getting.
Oh,
it.
I see what you mean.
But if you
regardless,
you didn't buy it and you're not getting one, then someone else shut your name off.
So then no, but other people are Yotzei. Whoever does deliver the box is Yotzei, regardless of whether they're getting one in return or not. Right? Meaning if I deliver a box of the Shalach Monos to whoever I deliver it to in the shul, so I'm Yotzei, because it's my box of food coming to you. Right? Whoever takes part, whoever doesn't take part, shouldn't...
Within those who took the fine.
Yeah, meaning it's just... Yeah. So, but anyway, so getting back to, because it's getting late and I want to talk about tuition for a few minutes. That's the basic idea is that you know, membership does count toward. You can use Meister for membership, just not what you're directly getting benefit from, and you know you have to figure out how much that is over the year. Or dinners. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that you can use Meister, but not for the value of the meal to you. So if it's a nice meal and you would pay X amount of dollars for the meal, so it's the same idea. It's like
right.
A seat. If whatever the value is of
no,
the.
No, because there's a difference between a seat for dominating
right,
somewhere
right,
where
right.
You're actually eating food.
Nobody likes seats.
Well, think about it. There's an actual.
You're tired. You
want
to sit down. You appreciate that.
and benefiting from the meal versus just having a chair to dominate, sure.
Yeah.
Because, as you're saying, you can daven without a chair. You don't need the chair to daven.
Could.
So
could.
It's more of the money to the shul.
I hear. Yeah, okay, fine. Right. It's true. Raffle tickets, we spoke about a little bit in a few shiurim ago.
Sell those little low chairs. That'd be a big money thing.
That would be a big money thing. That is true.
Raffle tickets, we said some say not to use it. Ramosha Feinstein says that if it's a limited number of tickets, you shouldn't use it because then it's like a business investment. It's really like playing the odds, as opposed to if it's an unlimited raffle, then you would be able to use Meister money. And we spoke about what to do with the winnings. Okay, tuition in just a few minutes. So tuition. We said that the Gemara says that you have an obligation to support your children until they're 6 years old. After 6 years old, it's considered tzedakah. And there's no longer an obligation to support children. There is a machlokas shach and taz, whether that's true nowadays, because obviously kids who are 6 years old have no way of supporting themselves nowadays, which in the times of the Gemara seems that they did. So the shach says that the Gemara said it, we follow it. Even though it doesn't seem to make sense nowadays, we follow it, and therefore you're allowed to use Meister money to support your children over the age of 6. The Taz disagrees and says that you can't use Meister money because now we have an obligation by law to support our children beyond the age of 6, and therefore we would not be able to use Meister money. It would no longer be considered tzedakah. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this topic, and says that you are obligated to support your children until they can make a living, basically. Until they have the ability to make a living.
Support in all capacities,
and therefore it would be an obligation. Others disagree with their motion and say that even though it's true nowadays children will not and cannot make a living when they're so young, nevertheless, since the Gemara says that a person has an obligation to support in all areas a child until they're 6 years old, that's when you have to support them. Beyond that, it is no longer an obligation, and therefore it would be considered tzedaka and meiser. Right, and meiser for any obligation. Now, that being the case, you know, using something to keep in mind. That being the case, you know, now to approach this question of tuition. So, a father has an obligation to teach or pay somebody to teach his child Torah. There's a question as to how far that obligation goes. Certainly, to teach Torah shebichsav, a father has an obligation to teach their child. What about to teach beyond Torah shebichsav? So it doesn't seem that a father has an obligation, rather a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to teach your children Torah shebal peh and beyond, but the chiyuv is only Torah shebichsav. Right? There's a difference between a chiyuv and a mitzvah.
It goes hand in hand. Have you...
No, there's a chiyuv, there's an obligation, and there's a mitzvah.
It's like, I don't know what the wording, but not good if you just teach someone Torah Shebichtav. I mean,
they have to learn Torah Shebichtav. But the father's chiyuv is to teach Torah Shebichtav. Again, there's a, the father should, and there's a mitzvah, Vishnantim Levanecha V'dibarta Bam, the mitzvah is to continue teaching, and that they should learn also Torah Shebichtav. But the only time that a father is obligated is Torah Shebichtav. So that being the case, it would make sense to say that beyond where the chiyuv ends, right, and where it's only a mitzvah, where certainly at a certain point in school there's no longer a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah to teach your child Torah, but there's no chiyuv to teach your child Torah, right? And if it's not a chiyuv and it's only a mitzvah, so it's a mitzvah that if in circumstances where you would not be able to do so otherwise without using meiser money, one should be able to use meiser money. Right? That's the logic of the Pri Yitzchak. The Pri Yitzchak is Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer. He was the Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And the Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer has a tshuva where he's asked from a father who used to give meiser money, and he was very careful to give meiser money, and then for a few years he was having a hard time, so he asked if he can give meiser money to support his child in learning, and his child was 15 years old at the time. And his answer was basically that since there's room to assume that a father's only obligation, that a father is has no obligation to support their children beyond the age of 6, and therefore to... And the only obligation is to teach the child Torah Shebichsav, and there's a mitzvah to teach Mishnah, Gemara, Halacha, in a situation where it would be challenging for the father to pay the tuition otherwise, then you can teach them Torah, right? You can pay for the child's continued learning Torah, right? That's the Pri Yitzchak's opinion. That you would be able to use meiser money to pay for tuition for the Limud HaTorah part.
But even the Limud HaTorah, you're still, a lot of the, especially when they're younger, all they're learning
so
is
Torah. It's true. So when they're young, it's a little bit harder to understand.
It's only until, I don't know, grade it is that they start teaching you like Mishnah and then Gemara and things like that.
Right.
Most of the time you're learning Navi, you're the only
question. The question, you know? Navi would be a question.
That's Torah Shabbat.
Yeah, and the question is whether it says Mikra or whether it says Torah Shabbat. I have to check. But you're right. At a certain point, you're right. It would be harder when the children are younger to understand why. Once they're learning Torah Shebal Peh, or once they know Torah Shebichsav, then there's certainly more room to be lenient for paying tuition with meiser money. Now, to get back to Shmuley's question from before about half. So I think, now that I'm thinking about it, I think that the rationale would be that the in a chinami there's a mitzvah to teach your children Torah, but the chiyuv, right, is only, let's say, up until a certain point. And beyond that point, then it would no longer be considered a chiyuv, and it would no longer be considered a chiyuv on the father, but only a mitzvah on the father. It's then that you can use the money to teach, to pay for school, even for their learning part, the half that's for the learning, as opposed for the half that's not for learning, because that wouldn't be considered a mitzvah. Although, I think there could be room to make the case and to say that that to have them in a Jewish environment would also be important for the child, and therefore to some degree even sending them to yeshiva, even though, yes, I could have gotten secular studies elsewhere, but sending them to yeshiva and to have the secular classes in the yeshiva environment would also be some form of quote-unquote mitzvah, in a loose term.
Well, and a mitzvah also, you're supposed to do everything you can to make sure you don't become an ani, well, by giving them an education.
Yes,
and
it's
hopefully
true.
Put them on a
it's
path
true.
That they can make money and then not
it's
be a
true.
Burden on
it's true. Now, all this being the case, there are many who are of the opinion that you can't use Meister money for tuition, because it's an obligation on the parents to be mechanech their children in a yeshiva, except for the part of the tuition that is not for tuition, meaning, you know, the scholarship fund and the registration, I don't know about the registration fund, but the scholarship fund, where it's clearly not for tuition, that would be just to the school, and therefore that would be certainly considered to be meiser. And the rest of the tuition
that,
would not be not meiser.
That you are allowed, but that's not meiser. You're just giving to an institution.
No, you're giving to the scholarship fund.
But you said the registration, whatever it is.
No, registration, I'm not sure about it. I take that back. The scholarship fund. Money of the scholarship fund would certainly, everybody agrees, even those who say that it's a mitzvah, and since it's a mitzvah to teach your children Torah, you can't use Meister money, even those would agree that for a scholarship fund you can use Meister money, because that's for sure Meister. That's going to support Aniyim learning Torah. So there is a machlokus about tuition, whether it's half, or even those who say that you can use tuition, you can use Meister for tuition, say that you should only use it up until, like the Chasam Sofer, half of your Meister money. Right? That only 50% of your Meister money, because it's not aniyim, it's for other mitzvah, so therefore it should only be half of your Meister money. Now the Pri Yitzchak does add that there's room to be makel even not the Chikki Shaita, even when it's not difficult, because it's like being Mefarnes and Ani. Because the child at that point is like an ani, and you're supporting the child, and you're paying for the child to go to school. That's like being mefarnes an ani. Alright, so the Pri Yitzchak has a lot of angles to be makel. Now, for daughters, there is no obligation to teach Torah to daughters. To daughters. And the Pashtus is therefore that you should be able to use your Meister money to have your girls go to school. Ramosha Feinstein, though, has a tshuva, which I put on the bottom of the page, where he says that that's not the case anymore, and that since there's an obligation for a parent to put their daughter in a yeshiva, in a Beis Yaakov, meaning in a yeshiva setting, therefore it's an obligation, and therefore one should not use Meister money, because now it's like an achiyuv. You know, at the same time you could say that it's not it's a mitzvah. Right? Is it a chiyuv or is it a mitzvah? So if it's a mitzvah, so you can say that if it's a mitzvah, then if it's difficult otherwise, then you can use your money even for the daughter's tuition, because it's no different than a son's tuition, right? That the mitzvah of keeping them in a Jewish environment and putting them through high school, maybe, even though they're learning beyond the what one is obligated to, but to keep them in a religious environment which is best for the religious health of the child, certainly through high school, so maybe that would be an obligation, or maybe that would be considered a mitzvah. If it's an obligation, you can't use Meister money. If it's a mitzvah but not an obligation, you know, it sounds like semantics, but it is a chiluk here, then in a situation where it would be like the Maharam, in a situation where it would be difficult to do the mitzvah, if not to use the Meister money, then you would be able to use Meister money. So, now, it's important to remember that all this being said, if a person struggles to make ends meet or to, you know, stay above water, and you can't afford to use Meiser, you can't afford to not use Meiser, then there's no obligation of Meiser Ksafim. We said that there's no chiyuv of Meiser Ksafim. Meiser Ksafim nowadays is a minhag, and therefore, since it's no longer a chiyuv, which is what Ramosha basically says in this last paragraph, he says, "Ulefi cheshbon Meiser shalom nikar shumarviach pachos migdei hotzaso shemidina pater." He says, according to this person asked the question, he says, this person that you're asking me about, you see from his expenses and what he makes that he's making less than he needs to spend. So therefore, Medina Putter. He's Putter from Meiser. Ki Parnassus Atmo Kodem L'chol Adam. Because his Parnassus comes before everybody else's. V'hu L'mal Lo Yisera. It's a nice thing. V'mitis Chasidus L'itein HaMeiser L'tztaka V'litchok B'hotzaz B'nei Beso V'aday Ein L'hachmer Bazeh. It's a mitis Chasidus to try to, you know, spend very little on yourself and your family, but vaday ein lahachmir baze. There is no obligation to be chai, to be machmir. A person shouldn't necessarily be machmir and not give their family what they need in order to fulfill the mitzvah of meiser. So, all this being said, with I don't know if it adds clarity or not to the whole discussion, but all that has to be taken with a grain of salt and in the context and the perspective of this line of this ending paragraph of Rav Moshe Feinstein, that it's a beautiful thing to give Meiser. It's a minhag that started by the Avos and something that we should certainly try to do in the best way that we can. But when it comes down to it, if a person struggles to get by in that way, so there is a reason, if Rav Moshe says, Ki Parnassus Atmo Kodem L'chol Adam, that a person has to take care of himself and his family first, before being able to give everybody else and spread himself too thin. Doesn't mean you shouldn't give tzedakah as best as you can. It means that there would be no obligation in chiyuv meiser in that case.
So basically, from what you're just saying at the end with the whole tuition thing, because it sounds like that you can only use tuition.